Welcome to Whistleblowers, episode 16. My name's Greg Kerr. We're going to delve into all things Donald Mackay and the Calabrian Mafia. We'll go to Jennifer Stone shortly, but let's reflect here on a series of murders in Australia that shocked the nation. Donald Bruce Mackay was an Australian businessman. He was also a prominent substance abuse campaigner who came to media attention and fame back in 1977. Through the circumstances of his murder, which has never been solved. Today, whistleblowers will shed some light on the story for those that haven't heard it, and for those that have heard it, we're going to tap into the collective conscience, reignite the old memories, and maybe in the fullness of time, solve this unsolvable of tragic cases. Good morning, Jennifer Stone.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful to see you. And Jen, you have got a mountain of information on this case, and it links to all kinds of places and people and personalities and parts of the world. We're not going to be able to cover it all, but we're going to just tap in to some very interesting aspects of the Donald Mackay murder and the Calabrian Mafia. So just at the outset, can you just sum up what you've learnt as an introduction from your study of the Donald Mackay case over the years? And then I'll give a little introduction for those that don't know the specifics. So what have you learnt over the years about this case?
Well, Donald Mackay case, there was a lot. There were links in the Woods Royal Commission. There was links to Juanita Nelson being a campaigner virtually against the drugs because she was against the development and what was feeding the development. So that's how I got to Donald Mackay, because they were both good sorts. They were both good people. And how come they were both murdered, both missing in action? There's no bodies been found. And the police have still got both of them as unsolved murders. It's not right. This is major crime. And it should be treated like that.
Very good. And thanks to people like Jennifer, we don't forget these cases. And our hearts go out to the family, the Mackay family, the Nelson family and others that have been affected by these large crime organisations that, you know, as you'll hear today, go right to the top again of the political network and sometimes the international crime networks. So for those that don't know, Donald Mackay was born in a sort of large country town of New South Wales in Australia called Griffith. And it's a rural town with lots of agricultural land around it. But he was raised in Sydney. His wife, Barbara, was an active member of the Uniting Church in Griffith and was a part-time physio. The couple had four children, Paul, Ruth, Mary and James. Donald and his family ran a furniture business in Griffith called Mackay's Furniture. Today the Mackay family still has a property in Griffith, but the family furniture store is no longer owned by Paul, his son. It was sold last year in 2019. In the lead up to Donald's murder in 1974, Mackay stood as a Liberal Party candidate for the House of Representatives against Al Grasby, the electorate of Riverina. His preferences went to the Country Party candidate John Sullivan, allowing Sullivan to unseat the notorious Al Grasby. And we saw Al Grasby in the media, a shady type Labor figure, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. Anything about Al?
Well, there'd be links to Graham Richardson then. So that'd be interesting because he links into the stock market guy, Rene Rivkin.
And this all came up in the Wood Royal Commission later on.
Yeah.
So there was political links that Donald was involved with, and Donald Mackay was concerned about the growing drug trade in his local Griffith area and learning of a large crop of marijuana nearby in Colliambly. And a funny Australian pronunciation. Mackay informed Sydney drug squad detectives, resulting in several arrests and the conviction of four men of Italian descent.
Oh, okay, for the mafia.
So the Italian descent arrest occurred, and the trial of the arrested men, Mackay was identified as a whistleblower. An attempt was made to lure Mackay to Geraldton by Mr. Adams, who wished to make a large order of furniture from Mackay's family business. So this is how the murder unfolded.
Yeah, but this is also, I'm sorry to interrupt, this is also a pattern. So Juanita Nelson had a knock at the door 3 days before she vanished. Donald Mackay's had this appointment, but it's a pattern that I've been able to pick up in other murders or unsolved murders, that you start to see the link. Yeah.
So this was an unsuccessful attempt when Mackay sent one of his workers to go to the meeting, so the murder didn't happen. It was believed to be an assassination attempt, like Jen's saying, which is a consistent pattern with other murders, mafia style. But in July 1977, Mackay disappeared from a hotel car park after having drinks with friends and has never been found. That sounds similar to Juanita Nelson.
Yes, it does. Yes. And they were both on about the same thing. Though Donald Mackay had come to Sydney, remember Juanita Nelson went missing in Sydney, the same police station that they were probably both going to, which was the detectives were in their old hat factory at the time. Now, Roger Rogerson was in that same old hat factory when he was a detective. So we know by his criminal past of Roger Rogerson that there was corruption happening. And it was actually the boys involved, because at one time there was a female detective in charge, and she said when she walked into the office, it was silence. They'd all stopped their chatter.
Interesting. So Mackay goes missing, and his body, like many others that we've talked about in cases on whistleblowers, has never been found. Stains from his blood group were evident in his van, and the ground nearby and his car keys were underneath the van. Nearby were drag marks, hair, and three spent 22 caliber cases.
Yes, but 22 is also a link to this crime gang. There's 22 parts to the skull. It's the 22 that they link to as their trophies because of the skull, but they're into leaving their trademarks behind as numerals.
The story goes on. The Woodward Royal Commission, later set up to investigate this crime and others, found that six prime suspects to the murder all had convenient alibis. On the night of the murder, Tony Sergi and Dominic Sergi, nominated as principal suspects by the commission, were on a pub crawl in Griffith with a number of police officers. Giuseppe Barbaro and Rocco Barbaro went to the Sydney and then the Gold Coast, not returning to Griffith until 20th of July. Francesco Barbaro, brother-in-law of Tony Sergi and cousin of Saverio Barbaro, who had been arrested 3 months earlier for marijuana production, stayed at the Griffith Ex-Servicemen's Club, and Robert Trimboli was at Ranwick, Sydney, at a restaurant. Mackay's disappearance made headlines around the nation, and many, such as Griffith Supervisor of Detective James Binden, drew the conclusion that Trimboli was responsible for the apparent contract-style killing. Trimboli had previously made death threats against Mackay. The killing fueled the perception of Griffith as full of mobsters and Australia's marijuana capital.
This is one of the nation's most infamous, It revealed the mafia's grip reached all the way here to Australia.
The police turned a blind eye.
So unbelievable, it could be something out of The Godfather.
He was extraordinary.
The trail of evidence clearly points to murder.
We don't have a body, so we can't prove death.
Full of corruption, right to the highest level.
Somebody related to the accused was on the jury.
Now, we will shed new light on this extraordinary case.
Crime Investigation Australia.
So, Jen, you've been researching this story for a long time now, and what are your thoughts on what's happened and where it's all at?
Well, I was told in 2012, maybe even late 2011, that I had done a good submission to the police on Donald McKay by a solicitor that taught law from the university, one of the universities in the Sydney. So she thought my research was quite good and exposed some links that had not been exposed before. So you go back to the area and we've had, you know, Robert Trimboli linking in, but I also had Robert Trimboli linking in to King's Cross, and we had Mr. Asia. And what went through my mind was people called Robert Trimboli Mr. Asia, but they also called Trevor Haken, who was a corrupt police officer, Mr. Asia too. And as I read through, I'm thinking, which one are they talking about? Like, they all came down in the Woods Royal Commission because Trevor Haken rolled over. The problem was they never caught the big boys behind. So you start to think, well, then what was Trevor Haken doing all these years? Where's he been? You know, he's just disappeared, but he stayed in Australia and his family went overseas. So it seems to be that a lot of the families will split up and the fellas will deal their drugs. And by being separated, the family gets the money, a lifestyle, and they never see each other, and that gives protection. There's also a way to hide the money. You know, Donald McKay, he thought about where he would expose this drug network to that he found. Now, he had done other little things before. One of the other murders that is quite unsolved still, because no one's really been charged for it, was the Luna Park fires. And that guy actually links into the orange picking up that way. So it was the father and the children had come up that way. So you start to think about, you know, I knew about the leaf lines coming into Sydney and the cannabis in amongst it all. Then we have Bill Bayer's brother runs an agency in Sydney Markets, and Bill was, when he was let out of prison in 2011, supposed to work there, and not one day did he do there in the markets. You know, so there were links I had for me to continue on my research. The Negetti Mafia, I thought, was a link to... I never thought that linked in to King's Cross until I kept reading up about Donald McKay.
Well, that's a good point for me just to cut in briefly, because before we get to the Honoured Society or the Calabrian Mafia, we'll just move this story along. In the McKay murder and the McKay case led to the then Premier of New South Wales, Neville Wran, appointing Justice Philip Woodward to lead the Woodward Royal Commission, and you've talked about that in other episodes, into the illegal drug trade in New South Wales. In 1979, Woodward found that McKay had been murdered by a hitman acting on instructions from the Honoured Society. The Honoured Society, a Griffith-based cell of the Ngeta, a Calabrian criminal organisation. Justice Woodward, in his final report, concluded that the members of this organisation involved in McKay's murder were Francesco Sergi, Dominic Sergi, Antonio Sergi, and Francesco Barbaro, and Robert Trimboli. Justice Woodward requested for police to search Griffith's grass castles, but this was denied. So tell us about the Nangeti, or the Honoured Society?
The Honoured Society date back to the 19th century. So this gang has been evolving. And I knew by King's Cross I had links in history back to 1804. So I was still, like, putting the pieces together. So as this gang has evolved, the joining of forces have helped them, and the police have said that now too, that, you know, as the police were getting one gang and another gang, they had to join forces to keep being able to work because the police were outsmarting them. And it's like a game of chess, but these people are at the very top of the drug network are playing chess at a very high level. The last 20 years, the Nangeti has come to dominate the cocaine trade in Italy and has used its profits, estimated between 30 and 50 billion a year. Now, that was estimated in 2003, and that was the same figure that Clive Small had spoke about, the drug network running from an auntie in Darlinghurst would be moving 30 to 50 billion a year. So I knew I was on the right links. Allegedly feeding back to five families in Mafia. Now, the families' names were Scipione, Trimboli, and that's where I haven't found any more. But it's interesting, my computer changes Scipione to Scorpion, and then we had Andrew Scipione as the police commissioner, and it started to make me wonder why the New South Wales government would allow someone with the same surname as in the five Mafia families linking at the top, even though it's in Mafia as a coincidence. So I know you could be a Harris here and a Harris there and be no association, but Scipione is not a common name in Australia at all.
Wow, so interesting story there, Jennifer. Go on.
So Francesco, so the Calabrian Mafia linked into Francesco Little Trees Barbaro in the Griffith area by the Woodward Royal Commission held during the disappearance of Donald Mackay. So Trimboli family linking to the Sergi, and then they were based in Griffith and Sydney. So when Donald Mackay found out about this drug network, and by giving it to Sydney, like if he had given it to the federal police, he may have been above the corruption. But you got to remember that the federal police, Colin Winchester was the deputy, and he got murdered. He got shot in a car. So very similar to Donald Mackay. And there's some similarities there. Both of them had the guns sourced in the area just prior to the shootings, which is interesting because the gunman said he didn't really know who it was and they had licenses or something. So it's very easy for back then for a gun to go missing, where it's harder now. Yeah.
Here's a little grab from just interestingly on this point that Jennifer's talking about. We did some research on the internet, and lots of the videos about the Donald Mackay case are no longer available or have been taken down, and we found that very interesting. The criminal underworld in Australia. The Calabrian Mafia, or the Honoured Society as it's known, allegedly behind many unsolved murders in this country. It's the Nangeti Criminal Confederation, started in Melbourne and currently active in all of Australia. The Honoured Society, or Nangeti, as Jennifer's recently pointed out, is alive and well.
Yes.
The Calabria Mafia is Australia's oldest, largest and most ruthless crime syndicate, trafficking drugs worth billions of dollars and laundering the proceeds through sophisticated international networks.
Now that's the link we've just had through the Banking Royal Commission in New South Wales or Australia to do with the Westpac Bank and the Commonwealth Bank. Now, if you notice, the ANZ Bank's being left behind a little bit, but they'll be dealt with last, I believe, because they're right in the thick of it. Because in King's Cross, to unravel all this, it links to the ANZ Bank. And the ANZ Bank allowed Abe Saffron to have offices inside their building. Why would they do that? And allowed him to put his, you know, his paperwork overnight in their night safe where it had come out in and out, you know. Like, there's too many coincidences.
And for those, well, just to interrupt, for those that are interested in reading about this story, you can go to Amazon where you can find Jennifer Stone's books on the King's Cross sting and also The Fall of the Cabal, Operation Arkstone, 1963 to 2020, Q Plant, The King's Cross Sting, Book 36. Do you want to say anything about your books, Jen?
Well, this is a police operation, so I have been told to stay out of it. I have tried to stay out of it, but it's my research that the police have been working on. And I'm not the only researcher. I know that there are a few others linking in.
All right, so back to the Calabrian Mafia, enforcing discipline with their age-old tools. It sounds like a Godfather movie of violence and intimidation. The Calabrians have been responsible for nearly 40 murders in Australia since the mid-1970s, about the time that Donald Mackay was murdered, and many more before that. There was one in 1982. Prominent one in the media, Filipino Papalia, dead outside his Croydon Park flat in 89. Mafia families in Australia report directly to the bosses in Calabria, and profits are funneled back to the mother organisation. Amazing. Was it Bayer had paperwork in the bank in King's Cross?
No, Abe Saffron. So Abe Saffron died in 2006, and that's when we had the King of the Cross come up, 2006. And like the Woods Royal Commission said, Johnny Braham was the bloodline of the drug network, but they didn't have anything else on it.
I remember that in the media at the time. But so life goes on. So Australian Negetti boss Pasquale, or Pat Barbaro, his name emerges. And we've got a photo here. You can see it on the internet. In August of 2008, you might remember this case, the Australian Negetti boss Pasquale Pat Barbaro, the son of Francesco, who Jennifer just mentioned, was involved in the importation of 15 million ecstasy or MDMA pills through Melbourne, at the time the world's largest ecstasy haul. The pills were hidden in 3,000 tomato cans in a shipping container sent from Calabria.
Welcome back to NTD Asia Brief. Australian police have seized the world's largest haul of ecstasy tablets, some 4.5 tons of ecstasy tablets with a street value of almost $500 million have been seized. 16 people have been arrested across Australia, and more arrests are expected as raids continue in the Netherlands, Belgium, and Italy.
15 million tablets of the banned amphetamine ecstasy were found in 3,000 cans of Italian tomatoes shipped into Melbourne more than a year ago. Australia's top police officer says customs agents replaced the pills with harmless lookalikes and tracked the delivery.
A tactical decision was made not to declare the fact that we had together seized and removed the possibility of the 4.4 tonnes reaching Australian streets. And that gave us the time and the space to analyse and to investigate what had occurred here.
Federal Police Commissioner Mick Keelty says police pounced 12 months later, carrying out raids in Australia, Belgium, the Netherlands and Italy. 16 people have been arrested so far, and more warrants are out.
There have been 10,000 hours of surveillance deployed to this operation to find the perpetrators of this world's largest seizure and importation into our country.
Police haven't confirmed local reports that the syndicate had links to the Calabrian Mafia and an outlawed biker gang. The ecstasy seized has a street value of $400 million.
Well, there we go, Jen. You remember that case?
Yes, I do. I actually, when this was happening, I was researching Dawood Ibrahim. I got into him. So he's the most wanted man in the world to do with his drug dealing. He owns a company called D Company, and his funds are all from drug networks. So they pay in, like what we were talking about before, the Mother Association. So, and on some of the internet that I was seeing, allegedly 10% of his funds was feeding into ISIS. And at that time we had the beheadings that were coming, you know, were being shown on the TV at the time. And I was seeing this was terrible, you know, but they didn't get the people behind this.
He's currently living in Pakistan or somewhere in that part of the world.
Dawood Ibrahim's Pakistan or Kakistan, but he's an Indian and he's a son of an Indian police officer. But he actually came to being as a crime authority when the father of John Ibrahim and Sam Ibrahim and Michael Ibrahim Fadi and Mayo disappeared from Sydney. And I had discussions with a couple of detectives on this because none of us could figure out whether it was a different person or not. We just couldn't link it. So it was interesting that he came up at the same time that the other one disappeared from here.
So, yeah, Pat Barbaro, back to the ecstasy tablets. He pleaded guilty in Victoria's Supreme Court to the charges of ecstasy and cocaine trafficking in May 2012 and was sentenced to life in prison. So very interesting information, Jen, you're bringing to light, and we're just continuing to talk about Donald Mackay and the Italian Mafia, the Honoured Society. Now, you mentioned a Jim Shepherd, and then you went on to talk about this structure that talks about the code of silence. What can you tell us?
Yeah, the code of silence. So in 1986, the hitman James Frederick Baisley was charged over the death of Donald Mackay. But he claimed he was innocent, and I actually do believe he was innocent. I don't believe he did the shooting. And he was just on the 3 days beforehand, the meet-up. Allegedly, he got paid 10 grand for it, but he was also the red herring in the case to lead the police to Melbourne rather than to Sydney. So then we have the Giovanni Franco, Ziano, Robert Trimpoli, George Joseph, and an unknown other persons to murder Mackay. So there were some links also to the drug couriers, to Douglas and Isabel Wilson and to James Baisley, and he was sentenced to life in prison. So significantly, Gio Franco Ziano admitted that he arranged for a hitman he knew as Fred to undertake the contract. Who's Fred? That's the thing. When shown photographs of possible suspects, Trezoni fingered Baisley as the trigger man. But Baisley was saying no. And then they fingered Fred Crabe, who was an ex-detective. And he's also a ex-detective that linked into Juanita Nelson murder. So that was a coincidence. Now, the Honoured Society, the Code of Silence.
Yes, and Jen's work goes outside, you know, the normal realms of police investigative work. And this is what I found quite interesting, this next aspect of the Italian structure, and the Italian society goes deep within the history of that part of the world and a well-known religion.
Yes. The Negati, the Italian's most powerful mafia dynasties, invited to witness a secret ceremony to which a young man, a Picchiotti, was to be formally inducted into the ranks of the Australian mafia, from which death is the only escape. Now, that's how all these drug runners that I've been exposing, they do murder, but the trophies are collected and then that holds the evidence. So what trophy on Donald McKay was held? And would that drug dealer be big at the time now? I believe so in 2020. So following, they do a, the Ngeti have the initiation ceremony, is known as a baptism. And for those involved is no less sacred than their affiliation with the Catholic Church of Rome. And that's what I noticed too. Many of the gang members in King's Cross would tell me they were Jewish, but they go to the Catholic Church at St. Mary's. And I couldn't work that out for a while. Following a house blessing, once all the guests had arrived, the men stood in a circle and the aspiring Picchio was invited to stand in the middle while his sponsor formally introduced him and presented his credentials. The sponsor next approached the young man, cut the tip of his finger in the shape of a cross and watched as three drops of blood fell onto the small holy pitcher of St. Michael the Archangel. The newcomer then swore his allegiance to the Ngeti and its notorious ombra, the legendary code of silence, before taking the holy pitcher and his now purified blood, setting it alight. Now, did this happen after Donald McKay's murder? I believe so. And I believe this is the murderer, the person who did the shooting. And it's interesting, and it relates back to the St. Michael's Archangel. And if you know about the ley lines in the world, the St. Michael's ley line actually goes through where the position that I once searched.
Interesting, and I'll just butt in here, Jen, and say it's October 2020 that we're broadcasting this episode, but through the media this week, we would never hear about this type of information, but suddenly we've found out that the Vatican has sent millions of dollars to Australia and the federal police is investigating why would the Vatican be sending all those dollars to Australia, and there's different conjecture on that, but you can't help but think, where did that money come from? There's not too many plates going around Catholic Church these days raising that sort of money. There's big business, there's big money, there's big structures behind this particular religious organisation. That's no disrespect to the people on the ground that go to this particular church in Australia, but it does leave you thinking when Jen presents information like this.
So where I'm wanting search was actually on a subdivision linking to St. Luke's Church on Roslyn Street. Now, remember, we've...
In King's Cross.
Yeah, and remember, it links to an X for the hooked X map, and the blood letting on the map, on the picture, was to an X. You know, a pirate would hide his treasure to an X map. So the X is a... notorious position, you know. But it's interesting that where I'm wanting searched is higher than the Catholic Church. And I always got told the Catholic churches are always built on the hill, but this one wasn't. So what would be above it? You know, and they say that the Catholic Church is supposed to have the Holy Grail. And in the Freemason world, the Holy Grail is supposed to be hidden in the world to a position X.
Interesting. And that church you're talking about is down the bottom of Roslyn Street in King's Cross. I think it's St. Canice's. Is that the one, or is it near there?
Yes, for St. Canice's. But it links into St. Luke's Hospital.
St. Luke's Hospital's on the way down. So there's that, that's interesting there. And the whole structure of the Catholic Church can be brought into question too when you see millions of dollars being transferred from country to country. Religious organisations in Australia have the luxury of a tax-free status, and there's some very wealthy people that have made a lot of money out of not the just the Catholic Church, but the Protestant churches, for example, the Hillsong Church, tax-free dollars there. It's a huge business and very lucrative.
Another thing, Hillsong and the Liberal Party both came out of King's Cross. You know, that's a major thing. And it's not really exposed much. You know, I haven't found the Labor Party there, but the Liberal Party and Hillsong Church.
And there's plenty of light in organised religions, that's for sure. The whole idea is for people to go and experience the light. But when you delve into the Donald Mackay murder and the mafia and the links to the Catholic Church, you can't help but think there's still a lot of darkness, and that's what whistleblowers do. Did you want to finish up with anything else on the Donald Mackay case, Jen?
Yeah, there was another one. So Jim Shepherd, he was a career criminal. He was acknowledged in the 1983 Stuart Royal Commission as second in charge for the Mr. Asia drug syndicate. He was sentenced in 1986 to 25 years. So some say he had a career over 50 years. He linked into New Zealand and Australia, England and America. You know, he was also a person who made himself out to be a person of interest in the Donald Mackay murder. He's only the red herring to hide who it is. So the Woods Royal Commission probably was right. The bloodline of the drug network linked to the Ibrahim family.
Wow. Well, there we go, folks. You've heard it all here this morning. We're a bit more upbeat at the end of our episode, but Jen Stone, investigative journalist and all-round good lady to the people, shedding some light on the Donald Mackay murder, the Italian connection and life in Australia with illegal substances and the underworld alive and well. Stay tuned next time. Four whistleblowers. My name's Greg Kerr, and you're listening to some traditional Sicilian mafia dinner music.